Chapter 27. Longford. Devon pulled back on the reins, bringing a labouring sorrel to a halt at the top of a ridge overlooking the prosperous town and the estates it supported. The midday sun and summer haze obscured the most distant villages across the plains beneath him. If judged by size and prosperity, Longford was no longer a town, but a city. Like Belshire, Longford had an old city encompassed by a new one. Longford Castle, home of the Duke of Longford and his son, Eutychus Longford, was built from limestone chiselled from the cliffs just below where Devon had stopped. The edifice shone in the sun like a beacon to travellers. Many of the outlying manors on the plain and along a lazy river boasted the same white stone, but some of the newer houses outshone their predecessors by virtue of crushed quartz mixed into their exterior plaster. A sparkling sheen played off the walls in the brilliant light of midday, always teasing his eye to take a look. By all accounts, Longford was a fine city, and one Emile had missed greatly upon her taking residence in Frostbourne. The holdings of the Ironhorn family lay within the Longford's duchy. The burgeoning sprawl of growth had forced the citizens to expand the pike walls that served as a deterrent against the migration of bison and mammoth. The walls extended an impossible distance along the city's edge, but besides these defences, Longford had no city wall or even towers besides those on the castle itself. Trees and parks graced the old town, while buildings choked out the greenery at the outer edges. Beyond the breaks to the east, stands of trees too small to be called woods or forests dotted a rolling plain blanketed in fields and orchards, glowing with the green of new growth. To the west, the Ursuline Forest, dense and nearly impenetrable, forbade the city grow in that direction. Devon's hurried journey to Longford had taken him through Hightower, Sharpton, and Hackwind, the road running along the western edge of the Icefire Mountains before turning west and into the Duchy of Longford. Now that he had arrived, Devon prodded Cyril forward at an easy pace, forcing himself to consider the needs of the exhausted horse, which he had driven mercilessly. His heart wanted to race into Longford and to find Mr. Goodwin and Mr. Kilcreek as soon as possible. Ariane may have already suffered arrest and imprisonment, and greedy relatives would no doubt line up to see Hightower stripped from her control as soon as possible. That anyone could devise a scheme to harm such a treasure of a woman defeated his understanding. She was so kind, so forgiving, so generous. Only a truly callous and depraved soul could perpetrate such a fraud upon a woman such as Lady Hightower. And if Devon found that soul, he would pay. Before leaving Belshire, he had half a mind to find where the sheriff had hidden her former steward and clerk, tie them both to Cyril, and drag them through a field of stinging nettle until they gave up their scheme and its conspirators. As it was, Justice Page, whoever the scoundrel was, would bear the brunt of his ire, if indeed the man could be found. If the mysterious go-between had heard anything of the ledgers and the ensuing investigation, he might have decided to disappear into another place and find a different identity, as Devon himself had done. Perhaps Mr. Goodwin and Mr. Kilcreek would already have ascertained his whereabouts, but what then? The Queen hadn't specifically instructed him about what to do with the criminal once found. His job, as far as he understood it, consisted of gathering evidence, though surely the sheriff's men would be better suited for such a task. His personal assignment from the Queen gave him authority, but none that anyone would recognise. The well-maintained road descended smoothly down a wooded ridge, crossing a small river that had swollen in the early summer heat. Travellers on the road increased as he pushed past several large manor houses swarmed over by servants manicuring lawns and caring for animals. The buildings and the spaces between them shrank the farther he pressed into the city, the bustling streets filled with men and women from all classes and professions. He began his inquiries into the location of the Brawny Maid Tavern and found it on the other side of the city in the newer growth near the edge. Unlike nearby buildings, the Brawny Maid sprawled outward rather than upward. Devon smirked. Perhaps its owners had realised that stairs and hard liquor made for poor companions. The edifice had a rough-hewn feel, constructed of unsanded, thick timbers and wide planks that could endure the tempers of both nature and its patrons. By the noise and the patronage lingering outside, it was clearly not a place for gentlemen. Reminding himself that he was not a proper gentleman at present, he lashed Cyril to a post outside and opened the door into a raucous world of loud laughter, pipe smoke, and drunken brooding. No one paid him any mind, his worn travel clothes not distinguishing him from the rabble in the least. The woman behind the bar fulfilled the tavern's namesake. Stoutly built with arms that could crush an ox, the proprietor regarded him with a practiced eye as she collected empty mugs. Her wild, curly red hair she tamed with a bonnet, and her dingy, frayed dress bespoke a lack of personal pride when it came to fashion. Davin dared any man to comment on it. He sat on a stool at the bar, remembering the Queen's instructions. The barmaid spoke first.
A man with a purpose and a bit of strength in his stride, new to the brawny maid, unless I am mistaken, she said in a sweet, high-pitched voice, reminiscent of a young girl's.
The disparity between the sound and the source prompted a grin which her meaty fists kept in check. I've just come for a bit of the Queen's Bull Ale, if you please, miss.
So sure that it's miss, are you, and not missus? Think I ain't got a man to call me own?
When in doubt, it is the custom to call a woman miss, he said defensively. In society, it is apparently more of an insult to be considered married than not. I congratulate you and your husband on your love and humbly repeat my request for the Queen's Bull Ale. She winked at him.
I'm not married. I've been saving myself for a man who's sturdy enough so that I won't break him. You're as fine and strong a man as I've seen at my humble tavern in a year. You think you could survive a night with the brawny maid, do you?
Davin swallowed. I think that would greatly depend on what we were doing. She leaned forward, yellow teeth revealed in full glory as her lips pulled back to deliver a sultry grin.
Well, I don't mean chopping wood, love. Where does your imagination take you?
Davin cleared his throat. It is that purpose that you so readily noticed in my stride earlier that takes me here and keeps my imagination from going anywhere else. So, if you wouldn't mind, the Queen's Bull Ale, please. She pursed her lips in a mocking pout.
Don't be such a bore. Most of the prisoners my aunt sends along are much more fun. So what did you do, Mr. Purpose?
So sure that it's Mr. and not Sir, he shot back, earning him a wink and apparently a drink as she filled a mug from a barrel. Her aunt? Was this woman implying that she was the Queen's niece? He didn't have the courage to ask for confirmation at the moment, but as she approached with his drink, he tried and failed to see any family resemblance.
Here you are, Lord Carver, she said with a smile. Been expecting you since yesterday. If you cross the room, you'll see an older gentleman there nursing his ale by the window all alone. Mr. Goodwin is his name. A bit of a grumpy codger, that one, so don't expect a warm welcome. Oh, and call me Mary, love.
Thank you, Mary, and good day, he said.
How much? Queen's Bull Ale is free.
He approached the table Mary had indicated, finding the sole occupant gazing lazily out the window. His old pale face was pinched and narrow, dark eyes penetrating. A hedge of grey hair encircled the back of his bald head, meeting with woolly sideburns that dropped nearly to his mouth. The dour cast of his expression and the skeletal emaciated form bespoke disappointed expectations turned to bitterness. An older man, he wore all black save an expensive white shirt, and his tailored black coat and waistcoat with golden buttons evidenced some wealth. Before Davin could introduce himself, the man spoke without moving his gaze from the window, his refined accent and easy speech coming languorously from thin lips. You really are a fool for leaving a fine beast like that unsecured in front of a place like this, Lord Carver. I might steal him myself. But if you arrived today, then you must have whipped the poor horse something fierce. I'd probably get Father riding Mary over there, but then she might enjoy it. And even a wretch like me has some scruples as to his mode of transportation. Davin sat down, noticing that Mr. Goodwin had not touched his ale. So you are aware of why I'm here and of my urgency?
In part, Mr. Goodwin said, finally turning his gaze upon the man across from him, folding his hands together. I know you seek Justice Page, but I'm not aware why you wish an audience with that pompous cretin. But I must inquire, Lord Carver, are you not dead? Were you not a doormat for a herd of bison? Last I heard, several hundred of them had politely wiped their hooves on your innards so as not to muddy the plain north of Tarbor. A cover for your induction into the Queen's dungeon? Faking your own death?
The latter leading to the former, though it is a private matter, so I would ask you not to inquire further, Davin answered, feeling uncomfortable. Mr. Goodwin snorted. Private matter?
You are a fool, Lord Carver, bless your soul. No need to stand on privacy here. I've had relationships with women so cold and nagging that I wished for many kinds of deaths, and none of the fake variety. I've certainly returned the favour in the other direction, too. Your solution was, I might say, quite brilliant, though overly friendly to the hag you were escaping from.
Davon gritted his teeth.
And how do you know so much, Mr. Goodwin?
Boredom, the mother of invention, dissolution, and idle gossip. Davon raised his mug and took a drink, gagging immediately as the vile, acidic liquid scraped down his throat like the claws of a direwolf. He tried to hide his discomfort from Mr. Goodwin, who regarded him with a sympathetic shake of his head.
I'm afraid that Mary has yet to learn the difference between the chamber pots and the ale barrels.
He removed a flask from his coat.
This will clear out the taste. In the future, don't ingest anything from this place unless it comes from a bottle, and only if you are relatively sure the bottle is yet unopened.
Hastily, Davon downed the proffered spirits, the fiery liquid burning away the foul taste of the ale. He wiped his mouth and returned the flask.
So you know this Justice Page, then?
Davon asked.
Of course, of course,
Mr. Goodwin said as he stowed his flask back in an inner coat pocket.
He's a dirty little man who has built a life on fulfilling the illicit desires of those of wealth and consequence. He is, by necessity, good at keeping secrets. A slip of the tongue and he'll lose his clientele and likely his life. So what are we to do to this man, Davon, since we are called upon to deal with him directly rather than hand him over to our not-so-trusty local sheriff? I assume we are to kill him. Get information?
Kill him? Davon wondered about the type of men he was to work with.
We are to get information from him pertinent to an investigation of Lady Ariane Hightower's estate.
Davon rehearsed the history of the situation while Mr. Goodwin absorbed the information with his cold, dark eyes.
Ah, it makes much more sense now, Mr. Goodwin said, leaning back. The Lady Hightower is a special friend of the Queen. Let's see, the Lady Hightower lost her husband because... You shot him, that's right, yes. Yes, quite poetic, then, that you should do this for the lady, eh? Does she not despise you?
Reflexively, Davon reached for the mug before memory warned him off. That is hardly your concern. He grinned.
Well, it's clear you don't despise her. I doubt any man would. The last I heard, the good earl of this very town had his aim set upon that lady and her beautiful estate at Hightower.
You feel his affections disingenuous? Mr. Goodwin scrunched his eyebrows.
Disingenuous? My goodness, how naive you are. A beautiful woman of large fortune? I dare say his affections are very sincere.
I mean that you don't think he loves her. Mr. Goodwin laughed. An oddly sonorous sound from one so thin.
Oh dear, love. You see, Lord Carver, before I can answer that question, I would need some coherent definition of that feeling. I've seen men beat their wives, throw fortunes and caution to the wind, do absolutely nothing and then absolutely everything, all for something they call love. When you blasted Lord Caunton into the grave for insulting Miss Emile Ironhorn, was that out of love? When your father, Asper Carver, married a farmer's daughter with no dowry, rather than seeking a more profitable alliance with a nobleman's daughter, was that love? He certainly thought so. But I think perhaps those blonde locks of your mother's were just as enchanting to him as Miss Ironhorn's ones of copper were to you. Given these two examples, it seems love is a bit of a disaster. Perhaps if your father had more of Eutychus Longford's type of affection, you would have scrubbed fewer pots as a youth.
Yes? Davon's ire rose, and he slammed his hand down on the table.
Who do you think you are, sir?
Mr. Goodwin extended his hand pleasantly.
How rude of me. Mr. Charles Goodwin, at your service. Now, should we leave this idle speculation about love behind and concentrate on the matter at hand? It seems you were in a dreadful hurry earlier.
Yes, let us do that, Davon replied, biting back his anger and shaking Mr. Goodwin's hand. Do you know of Mr. Page's whereabouts?
Certainly. We had word that he was wanted yesterday when we learned of your imminent arrival. Landon Kilcreek has him tied up in a room Mary makes available to us. We can question him at your convenience. Shall we?
Davon rose.
Of course, at once.
Mr. Goodwin stood, checking his watch.
Very good.
Two warnings. First, I've worked with Landon Killcreek before, and he is a man who has only used his head to cushion falls. A good enough brute for our purposes, however. Second, as I indicated, Mr. Page keeps secrets for a living, which means prying them out of him may be a bit difficult. Mary, a bottle of rum.
And who will be paying for that?
She shot back, face indignant.
My friend here has just had a drink of your ale, so believe me, he's paid, Mary dearest.
A staring contest between Mr. Goodwin and Mary ensued, exhausting Davin's patience. He pulled out a handful of shillings and plopped them down on the table. Keeping her eyes on Mr. Goodwin, Mary reached under the counter and retrieved an opaque green bottle and handed it to Davin. Satisfied, Mr. Goodwin walked away, leading Davin through a kitchen area behind the bar and into a storage area at the rear of the building. Mr. Goodwin pointed to a trap door in the floor.
If you wouldn't mind, Lord Carver, my back would appreciate it if you did the heavy lifting. I'll hold the rum. Oh, and I'll call you William. Don't use your real name, or mine, or Landon's. And don't use your recently exposed fake name either.
The long trapdoor led down a steep set of wooden stairs into an ample cellar. Mr. Goodwin descended first, instructing Davin to close the entrance after them. Illumination from a lantern at the far end provided light for their steps. The cellar, deeper than it was wide, was lined with racks of dusty bottles of every hue. Barrels of beer and ale awaited strong backs to carry them upward. The resulting smell of barley and fermenting rot mixed with the mildew clinging to damp stone walls. It took Davin several minutes to accustom himself to the stench, though Mr. Goodwin hardly seemed to notice. At the far end, their quarry awaited. Justice Page was bound to a chair and gagged. A burly young man in rough boots, leather pants, and a dark brown shirt watched over the prisoner. Landon Killcreek. His full head of bushy hair complemented a round, sanguine face with boyish blue eyes. Like Davin, he was strong and athletically built. The two pistols in his belt, his rough hands, and a rifle leaning nearby proved him a fighting man, despite the youthful innocence of his clean-shaven face. To Landon's side, Justice Page sweat his bonds. Pretentiously expensive and colourful clothing covered a flabby body. The chair on which his ample backside rested squealed in injured protest as its occupants squirmed for the new arrivals. Davin swallowed. This was clearly and literally not above board. He had entered a den of thieves and crooks and wondered if the Queen condoned this sort of underhanded behaviour. Wouldn't the Lord High Sheriff do just as well at extracting information from the man? Justice regarded them both, eyes defiant, but his pasty jowls quivered beneath the gag, belying his attempt at confidence. A round, four-legged table of rough wood sat near the captive, supporting the lantern. Mr. Goodwin put the bottle of rum on the table and opened the cork with a flick of a paring knife he produced from inside his coat. After a long swig, he returned the bottle to the table and scratched three roughly equidistant lines on its side with his knife. Mr. Goodwin sat in a chair in front of Justice, staring at him for a while with an intense, cold gaze. What had Mr. Goodwin been before he began his service in the Queen's dungeon? Despite his age and apparent frailty, he could project such a powerful sense of malice that Davin's skin crawled. After what seemed an age of staring, Mr. Goodwin began.
Mr. Page, let us be clear. You are a dingleberry on the dirty backside of society. However finely you dress or richly you eat, that is how I regard you. I care not for your life and am well acquainted with your habits and your business. I will remove your gag in a moment so we can converse. If you scream or make a ruckus, the tree trunk of a man behind you will renovate your smile to give it a bit more ventilation. Understood?
The man nodded. Landon stepped forward and pulled the gag away from Justice's mouth while Mr. Goodwin checked his pocket watch. As soon as Justice's mouth was free, he spoke with a guarded fury.
And you had best understand, sir, whoever you are, that I have friends, important friends. You let me go now and I'll be satisfied with your immediate departure. You detain me further and you'll regret it.
Mr. Goodwin replaced his watch in its pouch.
Please spare us the threats, Mr. Page. The only friends you have are ones who are scared of you or want to replace you.
I've seen funerals for hunting dogs that were better attended and more full of sorrow than yours will be. So answer my questions carefully, and you might live long enough to endear yourself to someone sufficiently so that his first thought on hearing of your passing won't be to plunder your house." Davin tried to read the effect Mr. Goodwin's words had on the wretch before him, but Justice steeled himself, confidence from an unknown source rising in his face. Perhaps now that he was sure that his death was not the only outcome of the meeting, he thought he might be able to bargain or bully his way out of what at first must have appeared a dire situation.
"If you want information, why doesn't a fine gentleman like you just pay for it like the rest of them?"
Justice wheedled. "I sincerely doubt there is a price I could afford for this information, Mr. Page," Mr. Goodwin continued. "My colleague, behind me, recently told me what you've been up to, and I do believe that the information I seek concerns a scheme that I would wager has made you an inordinately wealthy man. You recently built an inn with its proceeds, a convenient little place you can run your nefarious operations from, but in the quantities you've been skimming, I suspect you could build yourself a nice castle on a hill somewhere, and stuff it full of every depravity you enjoy until the portcullis burst. Do you know the money of which I'm speaking, Mr. Page?"
The interrogated assumed an indignant air.
"All the money I have comes from my legitimate business practices."
Mr. Goodwin shook his head disappointedly and drank deeply from the bottle of rum. "Let me explain these three lines on the bottle, Mr. Page. By nature, I am not a kind man in the least, and as it turns out, I am a meaner drunk. So the more I drink, the worse it gets for you."
He removed his paring knife from his pocket and brandished it.
"When I get to this first line, I'll take away that which is most precious to you, your hoarded wealth. When I arrive at the second, little bits and pieces of you will start falling to the floor. When I get to the third, well, let's just say that it will take a man of learning to be able to tell exactly what kind of carcass he is dealing with. So let's begin again. You've been receiving large payments and socking away some of the cash for yourself. Who were these payments coming from?"
"You've got no proof of anything,"
Justice growled. "Does this look like a court?" Mr. Goodwin returned. "We know you're guilty. Consider this the sentencing. The more time you waste and the more I drink, the worse the sentence gets."
Justice strained at his bonds.
"I'm not telling you imbeciles anything. My lads are like to burst through that door any second and take your heads off."
Mr. Goodwin took another drink.
"You mean the tall, lanky fellow and the stocky, tan one? Those two friends of yours abandoned you for £100 each. Of your money, I might add."
He tipped the bottle again.
"My money? It's safe and sound in the bank. You can't touch it."
Mr. Goodwin leaned in close.
"Your revenues from the inn are safe and sound in the bank, all for appearances. But you wouldn't put your earnings from your blackmails and dark favours and embezzling in a bank where someone might charge fees or taxes or ask questions. And you obviously wouldn't put it someplace easy, like your room in the inn. It was very nice, by the way, in a tacky kind of way. No, you wanted it nearby, so not so ingeniously you stuffed it in empty ale barrels in a cellar underneath your inn. Thanks for the new golden watch, by the way. I couldn't have afforded it without you. That is truly a staggering amount of wealth you have down in that basement of yours. Wonder what will happen to it when your inn catches fire tonight."
Mr. Goodwin had Justice's attention now, the lowlife's mouth agape. Clearly Mr. Goodwin had known of Justice Page for some time. Davin wondered for how long, and for what purpose. Killcreek wore a goofy smile on his face, enjoying the proceedings. Another drink from the bottle, and Mr. Goodwin held it up to the light, inspecting the level of the liquid against his three marks.
"Whoops! Looks like the money's gone now. Landon, remind me to kick over a lantern in the stables of Mr. Page's inn tonight. A questionable design decision to directly attach the stables to the inn proper. Stable boys are notoriously sloppy and clumsy, and you know how they love a fire. I do hate the screaming of burning horses, but what's to be done?"
Justice's face drained of blood.
"Now, you wait a minute,"
Sir Godwin's hand slammed down onto the table.
I've had just about enough of waiting, Mr. Page. I'm going to relate to you a little story before I ask my question one more time. I tell you this so that in a few minutes you can understand why it is I seem to be having such a delightful time carving you up like a feast day goose. Are you familiar with Manchester Street?
Of course,
Justice answered nervously, eyes shifty.
There was a flower girl who worked there up until about 3 weeks ago. Maybe you remember her. She had hair the colour of honey, and a smile that could wake up even a heart as old and broken as mine. Sweet-tempered, but soft-spoken and diffident. Every morning I would stroll up Manchester and see her there with her white apron, basket of flowers, and blue eyes as bright as the sunshine. Good morning, sir, she would say with that modest look of hers. Every day I would ask her for a flower for my lapel, and she would say, what colour, sir? I let her choose. Some days it was the yellow of a black-eyed Susan. Another day it might be a cluster of bluebells, or perhaps the passionate red of a rose. I overpaid her by 10 times, and she would thank me just as kindly and sincerely as I have ever known. I actually started to feel young again when I saw her. Notice, Mr. Page, that I've no flower for my lapel today. I haven't had one for 3 weeks. When she wasn't there at the corner 3 weeks ago, I thought she might be sick or on holiday. But after missing her for 4 days, I found out where she lived with her aunt and uncle and inquired after her. Do you know what happened to that sweet little girl, Mr. Page?
She done took her own life. That wasn't none of my doing.
Really?
Mr. Goodwin began scraping the undersides of his fingernails with the knife.
I want you to know, Mr. Page, that I cried when I learned that she was lost forever. Do you know how hard it is to squeeze a tear out of an old piece of leather like me, who has seen and done things that would make even you cringe? Of course, I didn't let the matter of her unexpected disappearance go, Mr. Page. I had to know it all. See if this little tale sounds familiar. A certain son of a lord fancied my little flower girl, but she rebuffed him as his intentions weren't honourable. To ease things for your noble client, you hooked the uncle into gambling himself into destitution, and told him that if he would sell his little flower girl into your brothel, that his debts and problems would go away. He agreed. She killed herself rather than fall into your clutches. Have you seen the poor girl's uncle lately, Mr. Page?
I heard he went travelling.
And the son of the lord in question?
I heard he went travelling too.
Mr. Goodwin took a long drag from the bottle.
You know, the two of them spilled their secrets before he even got to the first line. And they did go travelling. After a fashion.
After the pack of dire wolves chewed them up, there were little smelly piles of them all over the countryside.
There is such pretty country around Longford this time of year.
Sweat poured down the fatty creases of Mr. Page's face.
You lie!
Where was the money coming from, Mr. Page?
A long silence ensued while an unseen battle of wills was waged. It ended when Mr. Goodwin reached for the bottle again.
Wait! Wait!
Justice squealed frantically.
If I tell you anything, they'll know it came from me. I'll be dead before the week is out.
You can be dead before the week is out, or dead before today is out,
Mr. Goodwin deadpanned.
Seems an easy choice to me. The faster your answer, the more of a head start you'll have.
Chills ran up Davin's spine. In his heart he wanted to believe that Mr. Goodwin's threats were empty, a tactic to scare the truth out of Justice Page. But if they were, Davin couldn't tell. His tone, his intensity, his expressions all testified that his every word and every threat was genuine. What man could do such wanton cruelty, even upon a victim as deserving as Justice Page? Justice glanced around as if looking for eavesdroppers in the ale racks.
The money came without names attached from messengers who asked for no receipt of delivery.
Tusk, tusk,
Mr. Goodwin scolded him.
I'm sure a resourceful man like yourself was able to ferret out the origins of the messages. Let's have it.
Just a few, I swear. The ones that contributed from the beginning. At first only a handful came in, Then it grew. Hightower, Brighton, Goldfield, Milburn, those for sure. Others, I suspect, but cannot prove.
Davin frowned. Hightower and Brighton. Ariane's parents were involved. He wondered if the late Lord Caunton had recruited them or the other way round. Either way, Justice's information would damn more than one important family. He was needed alive.
And who do you suspect? Mr. Goodwin prodded. Tarbor, Sharpton, Hackwind. I cannot prove it.
And is the money delivered on a schedule?
Yes, each at different times and places.
For how long?
Almost 5 years.
And when you receive the money, what do you do with it? Begin with what you are skimming off the top and end with the person to whom you deliver it.
Justice exhaled, reluctant to speak further until Mr. Goodwin's hand, snaking toward his rum bottle, loosened his tongue.
I take 10%, that's all. The rest goes to a local noble.
Name? Mr. Goodwin demanded.
Do not make me tell it, sir. He is a frightful man.
I am a frightful man, Mr. Page, and I'm right here. Name?
Justice seemed to consider for a moment, sweating more profusely and scrunching his face together as if he had to squeeze the information out.
I would deliver it to a man who works for Duke Longford's brother, Baron Olivan Longford. He is a giant brute of a man, and I dare not cross him. I only know him as Dales. The Baron collects the money himself sometimes, comes to the inn for it, but it's usually Dales.
I know of Dales, Davin offered. He worked at the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company.
Mr. Goodwin nodded, and Justice appeared relieved.
Then you know, sir, of what I speak. He is as cross as a rabid cat and as big as a mammoth. He'll kill me for sure if he finds out I said something. The Baron will string me up, too, or just have me torn apart in the woods.
You've done the right thing, Mr. Page, Mr. Goodwin soothed, assuming a relaxed tone. I'm afraid you won't be dying any time soon, even though the ground begs for your immediate interment. You see, I believe you have just become the most sought-after person in Bittermarch. You have evidence of a massive conspiracy against the kingdom, so I'm guessing you'll be spending a good portion of the rest of your life in courtrooms and prison cells. And yes, when you turn up missing today, I'm sure a lot of important people will be looking for you to make sure your lips don't wag. Meaning being in your company is going to be dangerous.
We need to get him to Belshire, Davin said. Right away. There wasn't a moment to lose. Ariane had to be cleared immediately. Mr. Goodwin took a swig from the bottle.
Yes, I'm afraid we do. But we need to have a chat with the Baron first.
Shouldn't we have the Sheriff bring him in?
Mr. Goodwin laughed. The Sheriff? Of Longford? He's as crooked as Mr. Page here, and under the thumb of the Longfords. If we want to know what's going on here, Baron Olivan Longford is our man.
You two will be dead before the day is out,
Justice Page warned. Mr. Goodwin stood and pointed to Mr. Killcreek.
Make sure Mr. Page is good and tied up, and see if you can hire a carriage to carry us and this rat to Belshire. We'll likely need to leave in a bit of a hurry when we return.